We're up to Yeshaya Perek Chof Dalet, the 35th shir in Yeshaya. Hine Hashem Boke Koretz Uvolka. Behold, Hashem is emptying the land, and He's making it deserted. V'ivo Faneha, He will distort its appearance. V'hefitz Yoshveha, and will scatter the inhabitants. We learned previously, in the last perek, was talking about Sor, the city of Tyre. That was the commercial hub of the world. People traveled from all over to deal commerce with the city. It was a city by the ocean. Boats came and went. And the perek ended off mentioning that in the future, it'll have a downfall, it'll be destroyed, then it'll have a bit of a comeback. But at that point, the Novi ended off, V'hoya sachra v'esnana, all of its merchandise, and all the money that Sor got, in the future will be kodesh l'Hashem. It'll be holy to Hashem. Lo yeyotzer, it won't be stored up. V'lo yechosein, and it won't be accumulated. Kila yoshmi b'fnei Hashem yiyeh, sachra. All of this merchandise will belong to those who sit before Hashem. Lechol l'sova, to eat and be sated. V'limchase osik, and they'll have elegant clothing. All of the wealth of Tzor will end up in the future for those who sit before Hashem, those that are learning, those that are before the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim. That's what will be in the future. But the Navi says, this is in the future. Beforehand, there is going to be difficult times for Eretz Yisrael. There's going to be a Churban. And this is what Perek Chof Dalet talks about. The Mefarshim learn it's referring to the 10 tribes. But first of all, as we've mentioned at the beginning of Yeshaya, Yeshaya himself said Nevuas, as we had Chazon Yeshayo ben Amoz, Asher Choza, of Yehuda of Yerushalayim, he said Nevuas involving Yehuda, the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin, and Yerushalayim, and his Nevuas were not in the main directed to the 10 tribes. And just like when he said Nevuas about the Goyim and the different nations and what would be, there was a lesson for Yehuda, for the monarchy, for the Malchus Yehuda, for the people of Yehuda. So too when he said Musar about the 10 tribes, he wasn't living among them, he was in Yehuda. But it was a lesson for the people in Yehuda that if this is going to happen to the 10 tribes, if this type of behavior is wrong for them, Yehuda should learn the lesson that they also shouldn't do that. The Divrei Sofrim had pointed out that Yeshaya was, again, related to the royal family. His father, Amoz, was a brother of the king Amatzia. He was a cousin to the kings of Yehuda. So for him to give Musar to the 10 tribes might even look as if he was trying to put down the competition. There was friction very often between the Malchei Yehuda and the Malchei Yisrael, between the northern kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. And it wasn't that Yeshaya was coming to give them so much Musar, if not that it would be a lesson for those in Yehuda. In general, Yehuda was on a higher spiritual, higher ruchnius level. These psukim here are, as the Navi imagines, as if his Musar hasn't been helping. And he sees that the punishment is right here. Hine, behold, see, it's something that's surprising and shocking, but it's here, it's something they can visualize. The time is coming, there's going to be a destruction. And the words used are very unusual words. When the Mefarshim try to translate it, it's the words are not even clear, bokeh and bolka. They're unusual words, and the punishment is not exactly, there's a certain amount of unclearness exactly what this punishment is going to be. But the Mefarshim learned, Hinei Hashem, behold Hashem, is going to be Bokei Ka'aretz. He's going to empty the land. Ubalka, and then it'll be deserted. We talked before about the wealth all coming to those who sit before the Beis HaMikdash, La Yoshvim Lifnei Hashem. But before this, though, there's going to be a Churban. There's going to be a destruction. And right now it's actually referring to the 10 tribes, because they haven't done tshuva, and they're exiled during the time of Yeshaya. In his lifetime, the 10 tribes are exiled. Hinei Hashem Bokei Ka'aretz, Hashem is going to first empty out the land, that they won't have the produce, they won't have the fruits. This term Bokei is found in Hosea. He's one of the 12 prophets of the Trei Asar. And Bokei is like Geffen Bokei Yisrael, like a vine that's been plucked from its grapes. And the land will be, first, the fruits of the land, Hashem will be Bokei Ka'aretz. Ubolka. And then the land itself will be Hefker. Not just will the fruits be taken, but Uvolka, the land itself will be Hefker. Ve'iva Paneha. And then the appearance of the land will be distorted. This is like the next stage. After the fruits have been taken, after the land is Hefker, the land itself is going to be destroyed. Ve'iva Paneha, the appearance of the land will be distorted. And then after that, Ve'hefitz Yoshveha, those that live there will be scattered, will be taken off into exile. First their money is taken, and then the land itself is destroyed, and then they're taken off into Golus. V'hoya cha'am ka'kohen. As with the people, ka'kohen, so too will be with the kohen. Ka'eved kadonov. As with a slave, so will happen to his master. Ka'shivcha ka'gavirta. As with a maidservant, her mistress. Ka'kone ka'mocher. Like the buyer will be the seller. Ka'mal v'kalove. As with a lender. Ka'love, so too will happen with the borrower. Kanosha, and as with a creditor, kasher noshebo, so too will happen with a person who owes the money. When the Churban comes, everyone's going to be the same. First of all, in terms of positions of authority, in terms of greatness, the Kohanim were the ones in authority, they were the leaders. The people will be the same as the Kohanim. Ka'eved kadonov, like the slave will be like his master. Kashivcha kagavirta, and even those where there's a greater distance, like the shivcha will be like her mistress. There's a pasuk that says in Tehillim, Hinei ke'ene avodim al yad adoneim, ke'ene shivcha al yad gavirta, like an eved to his master, so too we depend on Hashem. But ke'enei shivchal yad gevirta, not just, we don't look toward Hashem like a slave looks to his master, where he's totally dependent. But our subservience to Hashem is even greater. It's not just ke'enei avodim al yad adoneihem, it's ke'enei shivchal yad gevirta. The woman naturally is more submissive, and the shivcha feels a greater reliance on her mistress, al yad gevirta, on her boss. So here it's ka'eved kadonov. The eved, the slave, is going to be like his master. And even the shivcha is going to be ka'gevirta, like her mistress. Everyone's going to be the same, because nobody's going to have any importance. Normally, when a person travels on the road, he takes along Ushneina Aravito, Imo, he takes along his lads, he takes along his slave, he takes along his servant, somebody to put the luggage in and out of the car. He brings along his chauffeur. But here it's not going to be like people traveling. When they travel into Golos, Ka'eved, Kadonov, Kashivcha, Kagavirta, they're all going to be the same. And then there's a certain authority and a certain greatness that can come from somebody's wealth. But as far as wealth goes, Kakone, Kamocher, whether you're a buyer or a seller, they're all going to be the same. Usually when somebody has to sell something, Chazal say the seller is sad to an extent. He's happy to get the money, but he sees that the stock is going, and that's it. He doesn't have it anymore. He sold it, and he doesn't have any more. I'll have to get more of the order more. While the Kone has something, in other words, he has his money, and he made his purchase. Now he comes home with something. It was a successful shopping trip. But Kakone Kamocher, whether you're the buyer or the seller, it's all the same. Because they're going to be taken, and it's going to be taken by the enemy. So what's the difference whether you bought it or you sold it? Nobody's going to have it. Kamalve Kalove, the Malve ordinarily has a certain authority over the Love. You know, the debtor tries to avoid him in the street. He doesn't want to meet him. He knows he owes money. He feels a little embarrassed every time he sees him. But at this point, the Malve knows that the Love can't pay up. So there's no point in the Malve going to the Love. And the Love knows that the Malve would have lost it had it not been lent out. So it's not like he feels he owes the Malve. He's not embarrassed because the Malve would have lost it anyways. And the Malve knows there's no point in bothering the Love because the Love doesn't have. Nobody has. So they're all poor, and therefore the Malve and the Love are the same. Kanosha. The Radak learns this is in terms of lending money, that's a Malve and a Love. And if you give somebody an item, and he borrows or he rents an item from you, and he owes you that certain object, that's a nosha. Kanosha kasher noshebo. The creditor and the one he's trying to collect that item back. He lent him the car and he's waiting to get the car back. But at this point, it's all the same because the enemy's going to take all of the wealth. But the comparison is even stronger. Because it doesn't say v'hoya ka'kohen, the people will be like the kohen. Eved kadonov, the slave like his master. It has two chofs, v'hoya ka'om ka'kohen, which the Malbim learns means that they're exactly the same. It's not just in some areas the is like the kohen, but they're exactly the same. V'hoya ka'om ka'kohen, ka'eved kadonov. And they're going to be the same. As you find in the Torah, Ki chamocha kefaro means, Yehuda told Yosef, you're the same as Paro. Ki chamocha kefaro. You're exactly the same. V'hoya ka'am ka'kohen. The people will be the same as the Kohen. Everyone will be the same. Because the enemy will take whatever they have and will exile them. The Gemara says in Shabbos, on Kuf Yud Tes, Omid Aleph. Actually, Kuf Yud Tes, Omid Beis. Omer of Yitzchak, Lo Chorva Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim wasn't destroyed. El Bishvil Shehushvu Katan V'Gadol. Only because the katan, the small one, the minor person, was the same as the gadol. They were all exactly the same. And once everyone was the same, the churban came. Which is interesting because, as we've learned, this pasuk simply, the Mefarshim learned, it's going on the 10 tribes. But the Gemara understands it that if the churban of the 10 tribes, and again, the simple meaning is the destruction came, and now everyone's the same. The Gemara understands it that actually people started treating each other as exactly the same. And once there was no hierarchy of authority, there was no concept of those greater and those lesser, and everyone was the same, that's actually the Gemara learns what caused the Churban. And this was a lesson that applied later on for Yerushalayim, that lo chorv Yerushalayim el bishvil shehushvu katan v'gadol, because the small and the great were all the same, that caused that at that point the Chorban came. Shenemar v'hoya ka'am ka'kohen. This pasuk, that the people, the common people, were the same as the Kohanim, everyone was the same. Uchsi basrei, and the following pasuk is, Hibok tibo ka'aretz, and pasuk gimel, Hibok tibo ka'aretz, the land will be emptied out, and the Chorban came. There's a lot to say on the point of kavod, but I sort of Chaim Shmulevitz just mentions a Gemara, and that we're familiar with. It's the Gemara that's very often learnt on Tisha B'Av, the Gemara of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and Gittin on Daf Nun Vav. As the generations went on, Klal Yisrael was on a lower and lower level. This is a nevuah talking about the Churban of the first Beis Hamikdash. We're going to learn a Gemara by Kamsa Bar Kamsa was the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, which was a few hundred years later. And his point is that even at the time of the Churban, there was a concept that people realized there was greater and lesser, but based on what was expected from them, Lo Churva Yushalayim El Bishvil Shehushvu Katan V'Gadol. But the Gemara says as follows. The Romans were surrounding Yerushalayim, and there was a debate within the city, what to do. The Chachamim said, well, Havubu Hanu Biryoni, there were a bunch of ruffians, there were a bunch of tough people in Yerushalayim who wanted to go and fight, they were agitating for war. Amru Lehulu Rabbanon. The Rabbanon said to them, Nipuk V'Navid Shlomo Badayu, let's go and make peace with the Romans. Lo Shavkinu, and the Baryoni didn't allow the Rabbanon to make peace. There's no reason why we should make peace with them and give in. Let's go fight. Amru Lehu, the Baryoni said to the Rabbanon, Nepuk Venavid Krava Badayu, let's go out and go to war. Amru Lehu Rabbanon, the Rabbanon said, Lo Mistayim Ilso, you won't be successful. You can't go and fight the Romans. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to do Nisim for Klal Yisrael at this point. The Baryoni went and they burned down all the storehouses, because they had supplies that could have lasted them for 22 years. So they burned it all down so that the people would feel the pressure that they have to fight. Anyways, the Gemara continues that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was smuggled out of the city, and he was going to go personally to the Roman general and plead the cause that they shouldn't, that something should remain from Klal Yisrael. So the plan was that he was going to first feign that he was sick, people would come and visit him, then they'd announce that he died, they'd put him in a box with some type of smelly item to make an odor, that it would seem that there really was a dead body inside, and he was taken out of the city. The Gemara says, he was advised, his Talmidim should carry the coffin, nobody else should carry the coffin, that they shouldn't feel that it's lighter, that there's a live person inside. It's not dead weight, if it'd be a live person. So Gemara says, when they came, so Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua carried out Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Kimatu lepischa, when they came to the entrance of Yerushalayim, bo lemidkarei, so the guards said, we'd like to just stick our sword into the coffin, and if he's dead, nothing will happen. But we just want to make sure you're not smuggling out somebody. You told us this is a funeral. Maybe somebody's being smuggled out. Let's just stick our spear in. And if he's dead, then there won't be any problem. Amr Lehu. So the Chachamim, the Talmidim said to them, Yomru Rabban Dukru. The Romans will say they stabbed their leader, their Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because whoever's in the coffin, you said it was the Gadol Hador, was Nifter Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and you're taking him out, and then you stab the coffin? How can you do that? Bola Michafei. So the guard said, let's at least push the coffin, and we can tell how heavy it is. Omer Lehu, so the Talmidim said, Yomer, they'll say, Rabban Dachvu. They pushed the Rebbe. This is the coffin, you're going out, and they gave it a push to, they'll say, you're jostling it around to see, is that the way you treat the nifter? Poschu Leibovus, they opened the gates, they didn't do anything. They didn't stab it, they didn't push it, they didn't do anything. And he was let out, and then he met the Roman general, and he made his requests. One of them was to save Yavne, to save the Chachamim. We see from that Gemara that even at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, there was a certain kavod, and these were the Biryone, the ruffians, the tough people who wanted to go in war against the Chachamim's advice, but yet they wouldn't push the body of the Gadol. They accepted that. That you're right, we can't push the coffin. But in general, as good as it seems to us, we're so used to the democratic, you know, notion, one person, one vote, and we're all the same, and it's all... But according to what's expected, it's... There was a point that Lo Chorva Yushalayim El Bishvil Shehush for Katan V'Gadol. The Katan and Gadol are treated the same once it's V'Hoya Ka'am Ka'Kohen. The next thing that follows is a Chorban. And just one idea, the Gemara says in Baba Kama, the Gemara is discussing, it has a question. One of the Amoroim was asked a question, and he said as follows, on Chof Amid Beis, Amrle, he said to the questioner, L'chi tishamishli, you want an answer to your question? After you serve me. And I'm not going to tell you an answer until you serve me. Shokol Sudre, so the Talmud took his Sudr, his cloth, his handkerchief, Karichle, and he folded it up. He did some type of service, Amrle, and then he gave him his answer. Then he gave him the answer. How do you understand that Gemara? He needed to be served. He didn't want to give an answer until he served. And the Mefarshim, some learn that sometimes your Rebbe has a difficult svara. It really doesn't make sense. On a superficial look. And the Talmud's sitting there in the class, and his Rebbe sees something, and his first reaction is, it doesn't make sense, Rebbe's wrong. He made a mistake. For certain things, a person has to have the approach that the Rebbe's definitely right. Definitely right. It's just a question of, I don't understand it. And very often you'll see this even in learning. You know, somebody will look at a Rambam and it doesn't seem to be, you know, precise and say, oh, you know, just got to change the letter here. Or, you know, this word is extra, you know, should have been taken out that word. But if somebody has the right approach, like, you know, the Rambam's correct, we just got to understand it. And they put effort in such intense thought and concentration, it has to be right. We just have to try to figure it out. His point over in the Gemara and Bava Kama was, I'm going to tell you something, but it's not always easy to understand and to accept. I want you to serve me. Meaning, if you have an approach that I'm the Rebbe and you're the Talmud, only in such a way would you be able to understand it, because otherwise your mind, it's like sort of, you have a block, a mental block. It just can't be. Somebody tells you something and it just doesn't penetrate. It just doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't fit in. But if he has an approach that it must be correct, then perhaps he'll be able to understand it. That's one idea, an idea of kavod. There are many different angles from which to approach it. Why is it so important to have this concept of kavod? But the Gemara is understanding that you can't have v'hoya ka'am ka'kohen if the common person is the same as the Kohen. Ka'eved kadonov, the slave is like his master. Kashivcha kagavirta, the maidservant like her mistress. If everyone's treated the same, that brings a churban. And the simple meaning is, this will be a result of the churban. That when the 10 tribes are exiled, no longer will there be any authority. Kakone, kamocher, kamalve, kalove, kanoshe, kashir, noshebo. It won't make a difference if you have the money, if you have the item, or if you lent it out, because everyone's going to lose their wealth. And of course, there's this lesson that if a person realizes, first of all, that whatever authority and prominence he has will be the same at the Churban. So those that have the authority should be a little bit more humble and more attuned to the needs of those that are less than them, because their greatness won't last. Those that have the money obviously should lend it out. They should do tzedakah, because the money is not going to last. And if somebody's owed money, he should realize that he's got to be patient with those that owe, because he's not going to remain the creditor forever. The enemy's going to take it. Pasuk Gimel. Hibok tibok haaretz. The land is going to be utterly, totally emptied. V'hibos tibos. And it will be utterly despoiled. Hibok tibok could be referring to the fact that the people will be exiled and will be emptied and will go into and therefore when they leave the land, the master and the servant will all be the same. And as far as the money goes, the hebos tibos, it will be plundered and all the money will be taken. So you won't have a malvin, a lovin, a nosha, they'll all be the same. The hebos tibos, and it'll be despoiled. Ki Hashem diber asadover azeh, because Hashem has spoken this word, this prophecy is what will happen to the 10 tribes. Ovla novla ha'aretz. The land, ovla novla ha'aretz, the land will become desolate. And novla, it'll become withered. Again, the words that used are very unusual words and they're hard to translate. The Malbim learns ovla comes from the word like an ovel, a mourner. A person died and he's no longer has his acquaintances and the people that he's with because he was nifter. And those that are close to him are sitting as avelim and they don't have the same traffic and the same people coming and going because somebody was nifter. Darche Tzion avelos, it says in Eicha, the roads of Tzion are avelos, from the word ovel, like in mourning. Because the mourning is a sign that all of the activity has died down, and it's died down because there's a death. Ovla, the land itself will be now sort of deserted. Novla ha'aretz, and the land will be, novla is like to wither. Novla means when there's a leaf that withers, the leaf itself has lost whatever keeps it together. It's withered, it's ruined. But it's an internal destruction. The leaf, with time, the leaf itself just withers. And so too the land will be, first it'll be destroyed, that it won't be settled. And then Novla Ha'aretz, the land itself will become overgrown, it'll become uncultivated, and thorns will grow, and it'll be a ruin. Novla Ha'aretz, the land itself will wither. And it's interesting, in Lashon HaKodesh, the words just seem to be, it's a relatively small vocabulary in Lashon HaKodesh. In Tanakh, there aren't that many words, and yet, within the few words, they're all related, and they're able to describe the exact meaning, you know, with just so few words, and the words are related. The Malbim says the word novla, to wither, means when the item itself, Maisa Pachusa Yotzeis Mishoresh Techuna Roa. If something bad comes out from intrinsically, there's some lacking. The word Ki Nevala Asa BeYisrael. Nevala is like a terrible thing that happened. It shows like a spiritual disintegration. Bein Menabelov. There are psukim that say Nevala means it's something that's unbecoming. It doesn't deserve. It's the essence of the thing doesn't deserve for it to be like this. It's lost its essence. If you're a person, you have to behave in a certain way. Nevala means the thing itself is rotten, is spoiled, is withered. The thing itself has lost its significance. In which case, this is what the Malbim says. We've mentioned previous occasions, the Ramban learns novel is like nuffle, and nevela is an animal that died. Nevela is an animal that like collapsed, related to the word nefela, like an animal that fell. According to that, it's just remarkable that the words are all related. Novla veheola novel, a leaf withers, but means that the leaf itself has fallen, has collapsed. It's no longer a leaf. It intrinsically has fallen, which is like a nevela asa b'Yisrael. If somebody acts in a way that's beyond his he himself is corrupted. Like Nefela, like to Nefela. Ovla Novla Haaretz, but the land is going to be desolate, like an Ovel, like people are not coming, Darchei Tzion Avelos, Novla Haaretz, and the land itself is like withered, Umlala Novla Tevel, and the settled, the civilized parts of the land are also going to be wretched and withered. Rashi says Tevel is referring to Eretz Yisrael. Tevel, it's mituveles b'mitzvahs harbe. It's like spiced up and flavored with many mitzvahs. So Tevel refers to Eretz Yisrael. The usual understanding is Eretz means the land wherever it is, whether it's inhabited or not. Tevel is more the inhabited part of the land, which would be the more significant part, meaning here, Eretz Yisrael. Umlala Novla Tevel. Umlala Novla Tevel. The Eretz Yisrael has been destroyed. Umlalu Merom Am Haaretz. Even those that are on the Merom Am Haaretz, the exalted ones, are also now going to be wretched, are going to be lowered and destroyed from their stature. V'ha'aretz chonfa tachas yoshveha. And the land itself, the land will be unfaithful because of its inhabitants. Chanifus is when you say something and you don't mean it. It's flattery. You say, and what you're saying is not the true meaning and not the true the truth. You're just saying it, but you don't mean it. Because of the way the inhabitants are, the land itself is going to do a chanifus. It's going to flatter, it's going to say things and show things, but it doesn't mean it. Rashi says, like there'll be ace of like grass growing, the four shoots that show, that come before the grain, there's the grass, a green sprout that comes up, followed by the stalk of grain. And you'll see the Esev, but there won't be standing grain to follow it. Or it shows you a kama, standing grain, but then there's no kernels of wheat within the stalk. There's no kernel of grain. It seems like things are going to grow and they're going to develop, but the land won't be faithful and things won't grow. Because of the inhabitants, so the land itself won't carry through, won't do what it's supposed to do. Ki ovru soros, because they've transgressed the commandments. The toros could mean referring to Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichsav, the oral tradition, the oral law and the written law, but they've broken the toros, the commandments. Chol fuchok. They've violated laws. Heferu bris olam, and they've abrogated the bris olam, the everlasting covenant. The simple meaning is this is all referring to Torah, and it just repeats it again and again to describe how bad their transgressions are. They've broken the Torah, they've broken the Torah, and they've broken the Torah. Ovru soros, chol fuchok, heferu bris olam. The Malbim learns that there are three types of laws. There are certain laws that are called TVs. Natural laws. Any society understands you can't have murder, you can't have stealing. There's certain things that every society knows that in order to have a community, in order to have people living together, there's certain natural laws that every community has. Those are the totals. Then there's chok. There's certain laws that are specific in a certain time or in a place. There's certain laws in order for society to work. He doesn't give examples, but I imagine from his description he would mean certain examples that, you know, if it's a red light, you got to stop. There's certain laws that society makes that are just safety laws, right? Safety laws and laws that are needed for this time and this place. And then there are other laws that are referring to Das Elokis, laws of the Torah, laws that are given by the Nevi'im, that godly laws. Ki Ovru Soros. What happened was, they've broken the Toros, is referring to the Torah of Hashem. They've broken these Toros, and they've transgressed it. Ovru is like they passed. They passed from one road to another. They're on the road of the Torah, Drachea D'Archei Noam. They're going on the path of the Torah, and they were Ovru. They chose a different route in life, and they've transgressed the Toros, and they're not keeping those mitzvos. Cholfu Chok. Then there are laws. Laws of the society that are set up, that the Seichel requires certain things need to be done. And Chok you find like Vayosem Osa Chok Alad Mas Mitzrayim. Yosef made a law that everyone has to give their a fifth of it to Paro. So Chok is a law that the society has at this point. Chofu Chok, even those laws that are a Chok, that are laws that right now are laws, and sometimes they're temporary laws that can be changed, but Chofu, they've exchanged the Chok, whatever society, whatever behavior was expected, the people didn't do the simple laws that are needed in order to get along together, they've transgressed the Chok. Heferu Bris Olam. And then there are certain things that are understood. Laws that are Bris Olam. The world always needs it. You can't have murder. You can't have stealing. Those Bris Olam. And that's also been Heferu nullified, abrogated, and the people didn't follow that. Al-Kain, and therefore, Ola Ochla Eretz. One way of understanding it is Al-Kain because Allah, people were swearing falsely. Not only were they lying, but they would swear to it. And it wasn't true. And when they swear to it, not only would they say they swear it, but they'd say, if a person swears by the name of Hashem, it's like, as I believe in God, this is true. And if it's not, that it's almost as if your belief in your whole belief in Hashem, you're saying is this statement, whatever I'm saying, I'm swearing, and he swears by Hashem's name, meaning the same way I believe in Hashem, I'm saying this. And if it's not true, it shows a total lack of respect, a lack of reverence for Hashem. And therefore it's interesting, out of all the sins that could be mentioned, this is the one that's mentioned. By the way, it's Baruch Hashem. It's interesting because in the Musar Svarim, and the Rabbi Yonah mentions it in Shaarei Tshuva. But it seems like swearing was a very big problem. Baruch Hashem, I don't think I hear swearing too much. I'm not talking about foul language. I'm talking about swearing. But there's certain things a person should be careful. A person should be careful. Ko yase Hashem, as Rabbi Yonah says, a person says, so help me God. It's something like true. That's like saying if it's not true, Hashem shouldn't help. A person should be very careful. He should avoid any term like that might imply that, he's swearing. But Al Kain because of Allah. There was the false oaths. So Ochla Eretz. That's why the land is consumed. And those that inhabit it are guilty, or they've been decimated. Al-Kain Choru Yoshvei Eretz. And that's why the inhabitants of the land are like parched, like burnt up and dried up in hunger and thirst. V'nishar Enosh Mizar. And few people remain. Another way of understanding it is, the Torah warned us, if we don't keep the Torah, it's a psukim in Parshas Nitzavim, Gofris v'melach sreifa kol arza, the land will be burnt with sulfur and salt, lo sizorav, lo satzmiach, it won't be planted, things won't grow, like k'mapecha stone v'amora, like stone and amora, where even nowadays people did by the Dead Sea. Al-Kain, therefore, Allah, therefore, Allah, the curse that the Torah says, V'rov tzavo kol ha'olah ha'ksuva ba'sefer hazeh, the Torah like made us, we have an oath and with a warning of punishment if we don't keep the Torah. And therefore, Allah achla eretz, the time has come that this Ola will cause the land to be consumed. Vayeshmu yoshvei bo. And those that live there are guilty, like Osham. But guilty, Osham, means that there's a guilt that requires a punishment. That's the term of Osham HaNefesh Ahi. That soul is guilty, means there's a guilt that is begging punishment. So therefore, Vayeshmu Yoshvei Bo, those that are living in the land are going to be guilty, are going to receive a punishment. Alkein Choru Yoshvei Eretz, those that live in the land have been burnt up, have become parched. V'nishar Enosh Mizar, and the inhabitants remain few. Oval Tirosh. Tirosh is the wine grapes that produce the juice. Oval Tirosh. The Tirosh itself has been destroyed. Umlala Gofen. And the vine is forlorn. There's no grapes on it. Oval, again, in terms of mourning. If the grapevine produces the wine, it's almost as if the wine is the son of the grape. Oval Tirosh, that grape juice is now sitting in mourning. The juice is in mourning because it has no father. Because Umlalo Gefen, its source, the vine, is forlorn. Nenchu kol simchei lev. And when there's no drinking and no partying, all those that are simchei lev, the people with glad hearts, now they start to groan. The party's over. There's no longer happiness in the land. Nenchu kol simchei lev. All those who would rejoice, the glad-hearted, now groan. Shovas misos tupim. The rejoicing with the timbrels, the tupim, has stopped. Shovas misos tupim. The Malbim learns that the word, we've mentioned this previously, simcha is an inner joy, a joy of the heart. Sason is when it's expressed with dancing, and the excitement and the joy is visible and shown to the outside. Shavas mesos tupim. Tupim, the timbrels, were the type of musical instrument that was used when you had dancing. They would bang it against their knee, and you'd hear the clattering and the jingle of it. Shavas mesos tupim. The rejoicing, the dancing that came about with the tupim has stopped. Chod al sheon alizim. And therefore the revelers, the alizim, those that are dancing, are happy. And there's a sha'on, there's a noise, there's a commotion. The party's going on and you can hear the noise. But if there's no dancing, the tupim have stopped. Chod al sha'on alizim. So the noise of the revelers has also stopped. And not only is the dance over, but a harp is the type of instrument that's not used really for dancing. It's more for the dinner music, the quiet. The Malbim learns Shavas Misos Kinar. And the joy of the harp, that even the joy that's brought about by the harp, maybe that's the more, the slower dances or the more of the waltzes or something, that even the Misos Kinar, the joy that's brought about with a harp, that's also stopped. Bashir lo yishtu yoyin. They don't drink wine anymore with song. Bashir with singing, they're not drinking wine. Yemar shechar l'shosav. The wine has become bitter. Has become bitter to those that drink it. They're no longer drinking out of happiness, like they go to the bar at the party, but they're more like the guys who sit in the bar and they listen to the soulful, sad music, and they feel life isn't worth living, and they order another drink. Yemar Shechor L'Shosov, the Shechor is bitter to those who drink it. They're not drinking in happiness, but they're drinking in depression. Shechor also means the strong drink. Sometimes the person's drinking, Bashil Yishtu Yoyin, it's in the party, he's drinking. He could be drinking a liqueur, he's not drinking to necessarily get drunk. He's having a good time. He's drinking the wine. And then sometimes a person actually wants to escape from reality. And he wants to get drunk and he wants to forget where he is and he wants to escape from the world. and he drinks sheikhar. He drinks the strong stuff, the strong drink. But he's drinking it not from happiness. He's yemar sheikhar l'shosav. At the time of the churban, whatever drinking is going on is bitter to those who drink it. There's a Gemara in Gittin that says as follows. Andav Zayin Amad Aleph. Sholcholeinu Marukva. They sent a message to Marukva. Zimra Menolon De Osir. How do you know that music is Osir? You're not supposed to listen to music because of the Churban, we'll see. Sirte for Kosovlu, he sent them back a pasuk. And the Gemara asks, Velishlech lehu mehocha, why didn't you send him this pasuk? Bashir lo yishtu yoyin, that with song they won't drink wine. Yemar sheikhar l'shosov, our pasuk over here, that the sheikhar, the strong drink, will be bitter to those who drink it. The Gemara understands that this is just not, it's not limited to the time of the Churban, that the day will come that there'll be a destruction and then they won't be drinking. But because of the Churban, when there's a destruction in Klal Yisrael, that should cause that people will no longer be drinking wine and listening to music. There won't be song while they're drinking. And the Gemara says, Ime Ahu, if I only had this pasuk that we're learning in Yeshaya, Hava Mina Hanimili Zimra Damona. I would have thought only musical instrument with a instrument is prohibited. I will depuma shari, but singing with the mouth, I would have thought is okay. Kamash malon, so the Gemara brings a different pasuk that a person shouldn't even sing with his mouth at a party. It's Tosfos says zimra menolin da'aser pirish bekuntris l'shorer beveis hamishtos. It means to sing like in a beis hamishtos, when there's a party going on. A person shouldn't have music when there's a party, when there's a drinking type of party. V'chein mashma mida ka'amarv, and it's mashma away from the Gemara. Tosfos says v'royu lahachmir b'chayotze dahu b'Yerushalmi. And Tosa says the truth is a person should be machmer, like it says in the Yerushalmi, da'avakoyim v'domich b'zimra. That there were people who used to get up and they went to sleep to song. In other words, they had music when they went to sleep, they had music when they woke up. Shemis'anig b'yoser, because that's like an extra delight, that he's like surrounded with music when he gets up, when he goes to sleep. But Tosa says, v'shir shal mitzvah shari. Song for mitzvah is permitted. Kigon bishas chuppah, she'osim l'sameh chosim v'kala. Like when there's a chuppah and they have song l'sameh chosim v'kala. And it's based on these psukim that the Gemara says. I'm just going to mention the machaber. It's actually brought down in Hilchos Tisha B'Av. There's a siman that talks about lasa zeicha l'churban, that things we do to make a zeicha l'churban. So this is the machaber. V'chein gozru shalo l'nagin b'klei shir. They made a gezeira not to play musical instruments. V'chol minei zemer, all types of music. V'chol mashmiei kol shel shir l'sameach b'hem, and everything that produces song to have a simcha. Hagah. Now the Ramos says, "B'yesh shomrim that." Some say it's only davka misha rogil bahen. There's nothing wrong with listening to music on occasion. It means somebody that's always listening to music, like the kings who get up and they go to sleep with music, or when there's a party, a beis hamishteh. This is in Tuf Kuf Samach Sif Gimel. It's, you know, when you look at that, it's, you know, there are some people who are machmer. There are very few people nowadays who don't listen to music. You know, zeicha l'churban. Rav Moshe has a tshuva on it, but it's interesting. Sometimes I think, you know, it's strange how much our civilization has changed in the last 100 years. I would imagine 100 years ago, a person never really heard music. There was no tape recorders, no radio. It wasn't even that long ago. I'm saying 100 years ago. So if you wanted to have music, it would mean a person would have to take out an instrument and play. And obviously if he's playing an instrument, he's not doing something else. And, you know, people in general, they were working and life was a lot more difficult. So there was times when they had music, but it was like a special event, like, you know, music. And nowadays, you know, we really have it. You have music, you know, waking up, going to sleep, while you're eating, in the car, always. But there's this concept that Gemara says, certainly it's an inyan that as when a person is, you know, eating, I believe there are those who permit it for a restaurant because they're doing it for parnasa, they're doing it for business. You know, they make studies, and like in the bar, they even have studies what kind of music will induce the patrons to spend more money. As if it's a certain type of music, they drink more. But so for business, you know, they're moderate, but certainly there's, it's better l'fi halacha that when a person's eating, he shouldn't have the music on, even when he goes to sleep, wakes up. I remember in camp they used to have reveille, that they used to, you know, play music when they woke them up. And then at one point they switched in the camp, and they started they had somebody speaking at the beginning for like the first few minutes. You know, good morning, everyone, time for everyone to get up. And they figured everyone woke up to that, and then they put on the music. Whatever, but it's such a concept, Bashir lo yishtu yoyin, that when there's a churban, when there's a destruction, with song, lo yishtu yoyin, they don't drink wine. Yemar shecher l'shosov, the strong drink will be bitter to those who drink it. Nishpara kiryas tohu. The city of tohu, it's describing it the way it will be. Once it's desolate, it will be tohu. Like v'ha'aretz hoisa sohu v'vohu. Tohu means empty. Nishbro kiryas tohu. The kirya, the city, which is related to that word kir, that there's a wall around it. It's a fortified, a strong place. And now it's going to be broken and it's going to be empty. Nishbro will be broken. Kiryas tohu, the city that's going to be tohu. Sugo kolbayis mibo, all the houses are closed up. Mibo, that you can't enter it. It's like you walk down certain neighborhoods and all the doors are boarded up and all the windows, nobody can go in. And that's the way the city becomes, like a ghost town, that everything's closed up. Tzvochal hayayin bachutzos. There's a cry for the wine in the streets. But again, it's not a crying that, either it's a crying that they wish there was a party, they're crying that for those days when they used to have wine, or it could be they're crying that they want the wine to drink as a drunkard who just wants to forget his status and his position now in life. Tzvoch al ayayin bachutzos. There's crying about the wine in the streets. Orva kol simcha. All of the simcha, all of the joy is now darkened, like erev, like night. Orva kol simcha, the simcha, and again that simcha means the inner joy that seems to light up your soul. It's the inner happiness. And orva kol simcha, it's now been darkened. Gola mesos ha'aretz. And when you look outside to see the mesos, is that joy that you can see, the dancing, the happiness, it's gone. Gola mesos ha'aretz. It's been like in Golas, the mesos ha'aretz, the joy of the land. Nishar bo'ir shama. And what remains in the city? Nishar bo'ir shama. Desolation has remained in the city. Ushi'iyo yukas shoar. And the gate is stricken with she'iyo, with desertion. The shoar of the city, the gates of the city, are normally where people would gather. Says in Echa, Zakenim Mishar Shavosu, there won't be the elders sitting by the gates. Shoftim Vishotim Titim Chavachal Sharecha. The Dayanim would normally sit by the gates. And obviously, all the merchandise, everything that was bought and sold, was brought to the gates of the city. That's where they had the all of the activity. And Ushi'iyo Yukas Shoar. The city remains desolate, and the She'iyo, the desolation, strikes the gates of the city. The gates are now abandoned and destroyed. Today there's a lot of Gemaras that are relevant to these psukim. But there's a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara has a question like this. In Baba Kama, on Daf Chof Aleph, Hador b'chotzech aver shlomi daito. The question could come up as follows. You have a bungalow in the mountains, and all of a sudden you stop up one day in the spring, you go up, and you realize that somebody went spent a week in your bungalow. Somebody went when you were gone, and he went into the bungalow, he went up for Pesach, and he enjoyed your bungalow, and he stayed for the week, and he didn't tell you. And now you come back, and whatever, you find out that somebody lived in your house. He didn't ask permission, and he's stayed there. Hador b'chotzech aver shalomi daito. The question is, does he have to pay? So you tell him, you know, you lived in the bungalow. A bungalow should cost whatever amount of money. You owe me the money. And the person, of course, says, you weren't renting out your bungalow, and I don't normally, it's not like I would have paid money for rent. I have my own house where I could live. Your bungalow is not standing for rent. I might have enjoyed it, but I mean, I had where to live, so it wasn't really even such a necessity for me, and you didn't lose anything. Does he have to pay or not? So the Gemara says, Hador b'chotzech aver shlomi daito, einu tzorech l'halos l'schar. He doesn't have to pay. And the Gemara discusses in this Gemara, Mishum shenemar, because it says, Ushi'iyo yukashar. She'iyo, the Gemara understands here, like Shadim, like Mazikim. That She'iyo yukashar, that the gates are stricken, either She'iyo is the name of the shade, or when She'iyo means when it's empty, the Mazikim come in. Somehow an abandoned house just seems to fall apart. And if it's lived in, the Mazikim don't come. So the truth is, even though he used your house, but and if you would arrange it beforehand, certainly he would have to pay. And he is obligated to ask permission. But if it already happened, you can't say, if anything, he saved it from the mazikim. If he moved in without permission, you can't give him a bill afterwards. But the Gemara says, Rav Yosef Omer Beisa Meisva Yosef. A different reason. A house that's settled remains settled. If people live in a place, Rashi says, a house that's lived in remains inhabitable. And Rashi says, Lafisha Dorim Besocho Roi Mashu Tzorech Umesaknoso. When you live in a house, things break and you fix it. So it's better if people live there, because we're assuming they take care of it during their stay, and therefore there's a benefit. The Gemara says that Nafkamina, whether you're worried, you say the benefit is there's no mazikin, or the benefit is that they fix things if they use that as a storage room. If they fill it up with wood, and I guess it's just a storehouse, the mazikin won't come. If it's a storehouse, if it's full, the mazikin won't go, but it doesn't have the benefit of people fixing things. But Ushi'iyo Yukashar, when the 10 tribes are exiled, when the Churban comes, Ushi'iyo Yukashar, it will be totally desolate, and the mazikim will end up coming, and they'll be, and it'll end up being ruined. Kicho yeh bekerav haaretz. So will be bekerav haaretz, in the midst of the land. Besocho amim, or within the peoples, those that remain in Eretz Yisrael bekerav haaretz, or those that go into Golos, and they're besocho amim, kenokev zayis. As far as those in the land, it'll be like somebody who's picking the olives from a tree, and he bangs the tree for the olives to fall, and all the olives are knocked down. There won't be anyone left in the land. Ka'ole lo sim kola votzir. And for those in the galus, those in the exile, besocha amim, among the nations, there'll be ka'ole los, there'll be few of them. They'll just be like the olilos, the solitary grapes. Im kola votzir, when the harvest is finished, and there are the few grapes that remain on the vine that you leave over for the poor. The olelos in kola botzir, those single grapes, so too Klal Yisrael will remain very few in exile. And Mirtz Hashem will see how the Geula comes to those few. And Mirtz Hashem next week. For sponsorship opportunities, please call 718-436-3024. Thank you.